Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
I want to mourn the old trees and tell them that we love them.
I've looked at clear cuts and burnt forest, and I've felt outraged.
We are the crowning glory of God's creation, and all of nature was made for us. Nature is more productive because of us, not less.
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Will you join me and George Jetson?
Huh?
This is Wretched Radio. Jane! Stop this crazy thing! I want to get off of 2020 just in case you didn't think this year was wonky enough. A Supreme Court decision most evangelicals missed, but you won't soon. A decision was made. Legislation was produced from the Supreme Court. 6-3, no less. Hey, what happened to those judges we were all excited about? 6-3 ruling that undoubtedly has huge implications for evangelicals. There were two court cases brought before the Supreme Court, and the ruling that came down, it will impact your business. It will impact your Christian school. It will impact your church. It will impact your kids. And mostly, it will impact your daughter. Going back in time to 1964, the Supreme Court, citing Title VII, where it informed us that we cannot discriminate based on sex. Prepare for an anachronistic fallacy. What did the word sex mean in 1964? When the ruling was delivered, you've got the answer to this, birthday boy?
Yep.
What did sex mean in 1964?
Sex
in
involved,
context of discrimination.
Sex involved genders, the two
exactly.
genders.
Boys and girls, that you cannot discriminate against. It was particularly aimed at women. A good thing. Don't discriminate against women. Well, now with a fair amount of irony wafting through those hallowed halls in Washington, D.C., the Supreme Court decided what they really meant is no discrimination against transgenders, transsexuals, homosexuals. You mean the Title VII that was intended to protect women from discrimination is now going to expose women in a locker room to a man who thinks he's a woman and desires to shower there? Yes, that's right. Why? Because of an anachronism. A word meant something then that it does not mean now. By the way, this is a biblical fire alarm that needs to go off when you hear somebody do that very thing. Our words today that we think mean this maybe didn't mean that when the book was actually written. So when we go about the business of interpreting the Bible, just like the Supreme Court went about the business of interpreting Title VII from 1964, we need to know what the word meant then. Mega important in biblical interpretation and, as we've seen now, in legal interpretation. So the Supreme Court deciding 6-3 that there can be no discrimination against transgenders, transsexuals, based on two cases, one of them was actually in Clayton County in Georgia. Apparently, not a flight instructor. The guy, you jump with him on the parachute and he gets strapped to his back or he gets strapped to your back.
Skydiving?
That's the one right there. He would tell people, don't worry about it, lady. I'm gonna be like really close to you, but it's okay because I'm a practicing homosexual. A fellow who was with his girlfriend didn't care for that. That man was terminated for speaking like that to customers. It was brought to court. This was the ruling. The other case in Michigan, a fellow, I believe, in 2007, presenting himself as a man because, well, he is, hired at a mortuary. 6 years later, decided now he thinks he's a woman who doesn't want to wear what is actually codified in their employee manual that you have to wear a dark suit with a white shirt. He wanted to wear a skirt. He was terminated. Brought it before the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court said those two things were big no-nos based on 1964's use of the word sex, which now, of course, means, well, pretty much what all words mean these days, whatever people want them to. What are the implications for evangelicals? Well, if you didn't think 2020 was a wild enough ride, this is going to be fascinating. Why? Because of the implications in all kinds of arenas. Rod Dreher, he's a political commentator, and he is quite concerned about this particular piece of legislation. It is hard to overstate the magnitude of this decision and the size of the loss to religious and social conservatives. The Supreme Court has declared that homosexuality and transgenderism are like race. Are we seeing the intensity in the racial disputes in our country? That means that if you say, I'm sorry, transgenderism, homosexuality, I'm not for that, it is akin to being racist. Can you see where this could be going? If you disagree, you're on the side of the Klansmen. This is not just the opinion of Democratic lawmakers or columnists at the New York Times. This is now the law of the land. And it became the law of the land thanks to Roberts and Gorsuch. That hurts, doesn't it? Two individuals that we thought, well, they're going to help save the day, didn't. A reminder, dear Christian, this is not to suggest you shouldn't concern yourself with those issues, but if you put your hope and trust in chariots and horses and Supreme Court justices, prepare to be disappointed, because you're going to be. This is Rod Dreher. The storm clouds have been gathering for decades, but most of us believers have operated under the illusion that they would blow over. The breakdown of the natural family, the loss of traditional moral values, the fragmenting of communities. We were troubled by these developments, but believed they were reversible and didn't reflect anything fundamentally wrong with our approach to faith. Now, Rod Dreher, he's scolding evangelicals for believing that Republicans were going to fix the problem. Well, and in a sense, he's right, because the problem has indeed gotten worse in pretty much every quarter in our country, and these are the quarters that are most important. Hey, I'm a big fan of small government. I love them low taxes. Bring them on. But those things pale in comparison to the foundations crumbling. What are the righteous to do? David was asked in Psalm 11. And the advice of his counselors was, flee like a bird to the mountain. This is bad. This is really, really bad. And it really, really is. From Dreher. Today we can see we've lost on every front. And the swift and relentless currents of secularism have overwhelmed our flimsy barriers. Hostile secular nihilism has won the day in our nation's government, and the culture has turned powerfully against traditional Christians. We tell ourselves that those developments have been imposed by a liberal elite because we find the truth intolerable. The American people either actively or passively approve. And if you think that it is going to stop here, says Dreher, you're mad. Can the slope slip further? Seems like it. We have been indeed concerned, and rightly so, for a lot of issues in our culture. But is it possible? Is it possible? The reason that we are seeing so much crumbling is because we have let the gospel slip away from us, and that we have taken our eyes off of the main prize, and that is the conversion of sinners into saints, whose thinking then progressively improves and society and culture rises with their ability to think rightly. It sure feels like we're feeling the effects. Writes Dreher, we failed. Fundamental abortion rights remain solidly in place. Gallup poll numbers from Roe v. Wade, they haven't meaningfully changed. The traditional marriage and family model has not been protected in law or in custom, and because of that, courts are poised to impose dramatic rollbacks of religious liberty for the sake of anti-discrimination. Now, you might be hearing this and going, what, so we're just supposed to sit back and do nothing? That's not the point of this diatribe. Nope, I'm not saying that any efforts to try to stave off those things were, if you will, in vain. They could have been worthwhile endeavors. But if it was indeed at the exclusion of or at the minimizing of the mission that we Christians are about, then it appears we perhaps have had our priorities a little bit confused. What are the implications for this? Yikes. Bathrooms, locker rooms, schools, colleges. Who gets in? Who gets out? Women's sports. Who gets to play? Who doesn't? Housing. Different living facilities for the different sexes. So dormitories. Employment by religious organizations. Healthcare, paying for sex reassignment surgery. Freedom of speech. Zoinks, Scoob. There's a little ruling that came down the pike. Did you hear about it? Probably not. We've been consumed with other issues, but this ruling by the Supreme Court may indeed have the biggest implications for the evangelical church. And it leaves us now, once again, asking us the question that the Bible gives us the answer to. How now are we going to live, Christian? This is Wretched Radio. If and you are a preborn.org/wretched supporter providing ultrasounds and even ultrasound machines, this is a great big thank you from South Florida.
This is our sonogram room, but we call it the miracle room because our mission is to save lives, save souls in South Florida. And in this very room, that specific thing happens. But for many years, we didn't have much support for this miracle room. Thank you for the new machine that is on its way. Thank you for your ministry to the unborn.
Ultrasounds save lives, but preborn clinics need ultrasound machines first. If you could provide a machine or if you could provide a $28 ultrasound, whatever it is, your support for preborn, it saves lives, it saves souls, it saves families. You can become a preborn supporter at preborn.org/wretched, preborn.org/wretched.
Since Poetry Open Mic Night's been canceled, I thought I'd read you some wretched poems I've been working on. Become a gospel partner. That would be a delight. All you have to do is visit our website. Become a gospel partner. You'd be supporting this ministry if you'll just give to us financially. Become a gospel partner. Visit wretched.org/donate, or else we make you redo grade 8. Okay, listen, I never promised you'd be great, wretched poetry. After all, open mic night was canceled. But would you still please consider becoming a gospel partner? Every dollar you give helps Wretched continue to spread the gospel. But without our gospel partners, well, honestly, there is no Wretched. If you're already a gospel partner, thank you. Please know we are very grateful. And if you're not, visit wretched.org/donate and prayerfully consider becoming a Wretched monthly gospel partner today. Visit wretched.org/donate.
Whilst you and I perhaps cannot do much work, God has not been sidelined by a virus, and he is working and he is fulfilling his promise to build his church, even in Nepal.
So there are 65 Nepalese fellowships ranging between about 4,000 to 5,000 believers who worship the Lord every day. And we see conversion every day. Literally every day, people are added to the church.
The Spirit of God continuing to convict of sin, righteousness, and judgment, regenerating believers, filling Jesus' churches. And these new believers, they need Bibles. Would you please participate in this great work and provide Bibles to new believers in Nepal and around the globe? It is merely $5 per Bible. How many could you send through Bible League International? You can do that at wretched.org/Bible.
It is ingenious when you think about it. The mission ball is a simple soccer ball covered with biblical text. An effective tool for drawing a crowd, making a connection with people, inviting curiosity, and ultimately creating opportunities to proclaim the gospel. Because the mission ball is covered with a thorough law and gospel presentation written in ink that doesn't come off very easily. Find out how you can support the mission ball. Go to themissionball.org.
themissionball.org.
Know your church fathers. Gregory of Nyssa was an opponent of Arianism at the Council of Constantinople in 381. He wrote a book called Not Three Gods, explaining that there is one God in three persons. Each member of the Trinity is fully God with all the divine attributes, yet each member of the Trinity is a distinct person. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Well, doesn't this seem rather charming and nostalgic?
You haven't heard that in a while.
Happy birthday!
Thank you.
Well, you got to say it like that these days.
You do.
Because if you aren't angry at somebody, what's the point of living? This is Wretched Radio. Somebody's having a birthday today. Congratulations, Tony, on making it yet another year. And this year has been a beauty. Wouldn't you say this has been pretty much the cream of your entire life crop?
It's had its high points, but, you know, no.
Give me one. Did you have the birth of a grandchild? Okay, I can accept that as a high point.
I did.
Other than
fact.
That, our culture just continues to appear to be sliding away. It just seems to have come out of the blocks somehow in a 100-yard dash. This isn't a marathon. That was actually run before the 100-yard dash. All of a sudden, we just got thrown into light. Did I get my racing metaphor goofed up?
No, I'm just trying to imagine running a 100-meter after finishing a marathon.
Well, let me just explain it to you then if you don't get the metaphor, allegory, figure of speech.
Is it a relay?
Our culture's been working on this for decades. Our culture has been patiently trying to chip away at what we'll call traditional values. This is the year it hit the J-curve. It just woo, and all of a sudden, it is like the rockets were lit and the engines fired and away they went. And it is just screaming. Now, this isn't new. This has been going on for decades. This is always a cultural fight, always, because human propensity, the unregenerate human heart, is bent to the left, is bent toward evil, is bent toward anything but God and anything that reflects him. And so any societal structures that appear to be godly, that reflect his character and nature, as a rule, godless nations will shun those things. Or at least not be able to put them together in any sort of correct mosaic that makes any sort of sense. And so it is today. We are seeing decades worth of work now coming to fruition. And many of these, I have to tell you, without any major damage to the nation, without any looting. They're just legislatively, through Hollywood, and specifically through education. As you look at what is going on in our culture, don't forget the Christian radio that you were listening to 20 years ago. Do you remember the number of ministries saying, do you know what they're doing with the kids' education? Do you know what they're teaching them in the schools about America? Do you know what they're saying about people from the past that were once esteemed that are now vilified? Do you know what that's going on? Well, that's been going on now for 20 years or more, and we're merely seeing the fruit of that. Academia has hit the streets. Academia and their worldviews, untested, untried, unmanageable, are now being applied to our society. This has been decades of effort, but I'm telling you, we get to see the J curve right now. Could be wrong about this. I'm no more a futurist than anybody else can possibly be. But if you look at the fall of great societies, they all have similar hallmarks. And these, we're checking the boxes. We are hitting all of them. But perhaps in a more extraordinary way these days. We don't want police anymore? Have we lost our minds? And the answer is, well, yeah. Yeah, we have. Because this is not biblical thinking. There must be somebody in authority. There must be people in place to punish evildoers. They do not bear the sword in vain. And if you really, if you're unhappy with our current government, whichever branch you're thinking of at the moment, wait till there's none of it. It gets really ugly then, because God has set up our culture to work with systems in place. And one of them is the government to bear the sword, which, by the way, it implies the death penalty. You do evil, terrible things, you're going to die. And I got to tell you something. There are some evil things happening that if a Christian does not call out for the sword of government justice to be wielded, Attorney General Barr had to push this through. I hesitate to read this to you. Let me see if I can find this in my stack of gazillion terrible stories that are going on these days. Here it is, right here. You might not want to have the kids listen to this. Four people are going to meet their end because the government is exercising and wielding the sword. Daniel Lewis Lee, a former member of a white supremacist group who was convicted of murdering a family of three, including an 8-year-old girl, after robbing and shooting them with a stun gun. He covered their heads with plastic bags, sealed them with duct tape, and threw them into a bayou. Where's the sword, government? Another fellow, Wesley Ira Perkey, convicted of raping and murdering a 16-year-old and murdered an 80-year-old woman with a claw hammer. Government, do your job. Keith Dwayne Nelson, who kidnapped a 10-year-old girl rollerblading in front of her home, raped and strangled her to death with a wire. Government, do your job. And we've now got a culture saying, no, we don't want them to do their job. The movement that is demanding a dismantling of or a minimizing of the police to send out counselors, to send out therapists, there's a reason for first responders. It's dangerous out there. And we need those people, and we appreciate people who are willing to put their lives on the line. Now, nobody endorses, nobody says that anybody in authority should be allowed to abuse that authority and hurt people. But if we don't have people who protect and who deal with the bad guys, these stories will go unpunished. These people will go unpunished. Government, do your job. Seems to me that voice needs to get louder and louder and louder. Right now, we seem to have a government that is working pretty hard on helping the culture dismantle itself. This cannot be overstated. Supreme Court justices ruling 6-3 that now, if you own a business, you own an institution, you cannot discriminate based on somebody's perception of themselves. Meaning, if a boy thinks he's a girl or vice versa, you just have to deal with it. Even if you're a Christian and it violates your values, too bad. The question, of course, now is, well, what about Christian institutions? And the answer to that question is, yeah, they didn't answer that question. Yeah, we're just going to have to deal with that later. Regarding concerns about religious liberty, the majority opinion noted that claims under the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, quote, might supersede Title VII's commands in appropriate cases. Might not. Church, do not expect your government to be protecting you for long. This is no joke. There is nothing different about the unregenerated human nature of people in the West versus people, say, in China, who don't allow Christians to worship publicly, to practice their religion, and to preach about the exclusivity of Jesus Christ. So while other employers in other cases may raise free exercise arguments that merit careful consideration, none of the employers before us today represent in this court that compliance with Title VII, that it will infringe their own religious liberties in any way. So a man who's a Christian who owns, in Michigan, a mortuary, who hired a man to do a job, now wants to be a woman and wear a skirt instead of his blue suit and white shirt, that doesn't offend his religious sensibilities. Too bad. You're going to do what you're told. That's our government doing exactly what it's really not supposed to be doing. The American Civil Liberties Union celebrated the decision on Twitter as a landmark victory, being the work of decades of LGBTQ people. It's been going on for decades. It's just reached critical mass now, and you're feeling it. You get to live in the time. Wow, hey, kids, I was there when the country crumbled. It's really exciting. Depressing. Quote, our work is not done. We will, this is from somebody from, this is from the ACLU. Our work is not done. We will need Congress to protect LGBTQ people from discrimination in public accommodations, federal programs, and more. Wonder what the more is. Congress must pass the Equality Act now. Justice Alito. Under this logic, today's decision may have effects that extend well beyond the domain of federal anti-discrimination statutes. Although the court does not want to think about the consequences of its decision, we will not be able to avoid these issues for long. The entire federal judiciary will be mired for years in disputes about the reach of the court's reasoning. And you know what that means, don't you, Christian? You and I are in the bullseye. And it is just a matter of time. How now are you living? This is Wretched Radio.
Here's your invitation to support SOS Ministries. They want to see a God-fearing, gospel-proclaiming church rise up across Uganda and impact the whole of Ugandan society. SOS Ministries hopes to accomplish all of this with community outreach, Legacy Christian Academy, the Ministry of Church Strengthening, and the Shepherd's Training Center to thoroughly equip indigenous pastors. So would you consider supporting SOS Ministries? Go to sosministries.com. sosministries.com.
This is Wretched Radio. Hi, I'm Tony Burkennis. Survey day. Start with a Barna Group study that says more than 3/4 of American pastors support peaceful protests like the ones taking place across the country. The Christian Post reports the survey studied some 400 pastors, 76% believing churches should support the protests, 15% disagreeing, and 8% said they had no opinion on the issue. According to Barna President Dave Kinnaman, church leaders are actively leaning in on conversations about racism in America in a way they haven't in the past. He said it may surprise some that 76% of church leaders believe the church should support peaceful protests or demonstrations happening across the country. About 62% also said they believe the churches had addressed the protests. 94% said they believe the church has a responsibility to publicly denounce racism. Kinnaman adding, what the church seems to have been convinced of in recent weeks is that this is more of a widespread problem and that they are being called to take a more proactive, bold stance toward social justice. Survey number 2, a majority of Americans believe the government should stay out of faith-based organizations' internal religious disputes. A new survey showed widespread support for the religious liberty of churches protected by the First Amendment. The poll was conducted as part of Caravan's weekly omnibus survey. By a margin of 68% to 23%, Americans believe that an important facet of separation of church and state is that the government can't get involved in a religious organization's internal religious disputes. The survey released this week for the Beckett Fund. The survey also found 66% of Americans believe a religious organization should be able to make decisions about who it hires to teach its faith to the next generation, free from government control. 59% believe the government should never be allowed to resolve disputes about a religion's interpretation of its own teachings. How'd the other 41% figure? 55% say an employee of a religious organization may play an important role in passing on a religion's teachings, even if, quote, the employee does not have a religious-sounding title. It also found, despite skepticism, most Americans have a fairly decent grasp of what the Constitution says about religious freedom. And the third survey says most churches have not returned to in-person services. Many are uncertain about the future of worship gatherings. Uh-oh. Survey came from the Wheaton Billy Graham Center's SEND Institute, Exponential, and the Association of Related Churches. Wowzer, does that all fit on a card? The eye-opener was that most churches have the potential to meet for in-person services, but 60% have not. Some church leaders, says the study, explain that while they are allowed to gather in some capacity, the health and safety of their congregation and community outweigh their ability and desire to gather. Huh. My mind wanders to Hebrews 10:24 and 25 right there. More Wretched Radio is straight ahead. I'm Tony Verkennis.
Books of the Bible. Amos was a shepherd called to prophesy during a time of prosperity in Israel and Judah. But this prosperity was accompanied by idolatry, extravagance, and corruption. When you consider the society you live in, Amos declares that God judges societies by his standard of righteousness. He hates all corruption and injustice. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
If you hate the tribalism in our culture, wait till it starts to hit your church. This is Wretched Radio. Are we not seeing factions, and more factions, voices vying for your attention? Believe this, think that, join us. Here's our song sheet. Sing with us. And let's be honest, we have a tendency to find those voices that sound similar to ours and join their chorus without perhaps doing a fair job of listening to other potential voices, because we are indeed a tribal culture. We are not one nation out of many. We are as individualistic or as cliquish as we could possibly be. And we are seeing that and feeling that every time we turn on the news, and it is frustrating, is it not? We see people making one decision, then making another. We see inconsistencies, and we're banging our head, and we're going, what is the matter with you people? Why are you thinking like this? And so you get together with those people who think like you, and then they get together with people who think like them, and then those people get together, and that is just a cultural civil war that is taking place. You're feeling it. I know you are. If you're outside at all, if you're talking to any human beings, you get that and you see it. You see it on TV with this news network does this, that news network does that, and the yelling and the shouting that happens on those programs and the arguing and the fighting. It is simply reflective of what's going on in our society. It's like gas on the flame of this divided tribalism that is really not very pleasant to live in, is it? What if that starts to happen in your church? Maybe it already has. Are you now having to go to church with people who disagree with you on these issues? I'll bet you are. Because issues of COVID, issues of social justice, they do not check themselves at the front door of a church. In fact, quite honestly, these are the issues that the church should be able to speak about better than anybody else. Nevertheless, you're watching your thing, somebody else is watching theirs. You're watching the right thing, they're watching the wrong thing. You read the right articles, they read the wrong ones, and they think the exact same thing. And now you go to church together. Yikes! Are we looking at a similar sort of divide in the evangelical church that we are seeing in our culture? I fear we might be. If you recall, about a year or two ago, some voices were saying, this issue about social justice, this is a danger to evangelical Christianity. It could cause a larger divide and greater splits than anything we've ever seen. And I'm starting to think, yikes, we might be seeing that. Have you been brought into the conversation in your church? And by the way, may I ask a question? Has it actually been a conversation? This is a trend that I've seen in evangelical churches, where the church will announce, we want to be a church that has hard conversations. So here are links to things that we want you to read and consume so that, you know, we can get together and dialogue about these things. And it's one social justice article after another. It's one more woke article about critical race thinking theory, about all of these issues that are not grounded in the Bible but tend to be more grounded in Marxism. And they're saying, just consume all of these things so we can have a conversation. That doesn't feel really honest to me. It seems more like we know what we want you to think, and we're going to put it under the subterfuge of we're going to have a conversation. And I think that's starting to happen a lot because there are more and more local pastors with local churches that are believing new ideas, cultural ideas. They want to bring them into the church. They realize how divisive they are, so they put it under the cloak of, it's just a conversation. I have to tell you, Pastor, if you're doing that, please just be honest. Please just say what your agenda is. Just say what you want to do. And don't couch it. And then don't guilt people into not thinking exactly the way that you might on a particular issue. If we're going to have a conversation, let's indeed have a conversation. But I fear that's not what's happening a lot. And even outside of those particular churches, which appear to have a definite agenda, everybody's bringing their agenda into the church, don't we? How are we going to get along on this one? We haven't even made it through COVID debates. We haven't even figured out how to handle one another with masking, not masking, gathering, singing, shaking hands, bumping elbows. And those are passionate issues. And now comes along, just an absolute tinderbox, the racial issue. And you've got thoughts about this, and everybody's got thoughts, and now we're bringing them into the body. At least for those people, by the way, who are actually returning to church, because it seems that a lot of people are quite content in not actually showing up on a Sunday morning and just doing church online, which I might actually suggest is another issue coming up real soon for the church, because once all the doors are flung open, if Fauci lets us, how are people going to come back? There was an interesting article, total aside, interesting article, that gave us 10 reasons why you should go to church when it opens up again. And it was, a lot of them were excellent. They were excellent. It was things like, okay, we're human beings. We do things together. We're supposed to be interacting with one another. We're not just pixels. That's not how we are to flourish. We do these things together. Furthermore, as Christians, we are a body. You're an elbow, somebody's a toe, you get together and you do the work of the church. There's the love that you receive, just a pat on the back, which actually might be the only touch somebody gets all week long. Can't do those things on the internet. And I thought that was all pretty fair advice and an encouragement to get yourself back to church as soon as you can. But I thought it was missing one. Church discipline. If you don't go back to church, you're going to be disciplined. Here's the problem. These days, there's not a whole lot of church membershiping going on. We're regular attenders. And this will be an example of a lot of people, a lot of sheep who could be straying and in a lot of danger because they don't want to go back to church for whatever reason. They've been persuaded that they can consume stuff online. So now they're not going to go to church. And what can the pastor do about it? Nothing. And you watch numbers decline. If people were members, the elders, out of a sense of care, not out of a sense of plunging number concern, but because they're worried about somebody, hey, where are you? You need to get back to church. Unless you've got some reason for this that you need to explain, lickety-split, we're really concerned about your soul. And they would be disciplined, another value of church membership and church discipline. It keeps people safe who might be inclined to just follow the current trend of not needing church anymore. But so it is. The people who are going to return come back together. Let me ask you a question. Whichever side of the social justice issue that you're on, do you believe that people who are on the other side are saved? Do you believe that somebody who disagrees with you, let me just do it one at a time, the very lines that we used to try to blur are now so starkly drawn for us, we have to use these terms. Let's just say you are a black Christian. I just hate that phrase. I just really hate that. At any rate, I'm like, white is spent, whatever. But that's our language today. And you believe passionately in systemic racism. You're going to church with some white Christians who don't. Do you think they're saved? Now, by the way, I can't recall the name of the book. It's a bit fringy. But there are some people who are saying white people, they're beyond salvation. They can't be saved. I think that's a few, but nevertheless, a book has been written about it. Conversely, you're white. You believe that a system can't be racist. You believe that it is, no, individuals can be racist, but the systems can't be. And there's better ways of fixing this than what we're currently trying to employ. Those black people disagree with you in your church. Are they saved? If we don't answer that question, we will not come anywhere near the unity that we need to. And I get the implications of this. I truly do. They are indeed massive. But could it be we've got ourselves a Romans 14 issue right in front of us? Passionate one, sensitive one, tender one, a very real one. It's not meat being sacrificed to idols, but it's the social issues that certainly do have theological underpinnings to a degree, but certainly not any essentials, and that we with one another need to be able to live in the unity that God demands of us, even when we disagree so vehemently on such passionate issues. When your church gets back together, black, white, mixed, do you believe those other folk are in the fellowship and going to heaven with you? This is Wretched Radio.
Thanks for joining us. Always glad when you spend part of your day listening to Wretched Radio. Our new video series, Road Trip to Truth, is almost ready for you. Road Trip to Truth is hosted by John Pabares. They were on the road at college campuses talking with the students about the tough issues that they struggle with. The important issues like, why is there evil in this world? Is Jesus really God? Is there only one way to heaven? Yeah, things on that level. John also had the opportunity to share the gospel with them. And you get to be a fly on the wall to hopefully give you some ideas on how you can share your faith with this depressed, anxious, and lost generation. Road Trip to Truth with John Fabares, coming to a Wretched store near you soon. Road Trip to Truth and all our resources made possible by our gospel partners. If you are able, would you consider becoming a Wretched gospel partner? Go to wretched.org/donate for details. Wretched.org/donate. Wretched. Amazing grace. Amazing gospel.
Uh-huh. And you didn't think it was worth your time to pay attention in geography class.
I'm thinking about a village that we visited called Pirasmani. It took us about 4 hours to get there, and the road was so bumpy that we were a couple of basket cases by the time we got there. But you know what? There were 35 kids waiting there for us. They have no church in this village. Talk about an unreached place, and we're now operating a tomorrow club in that place.
You and I could not find that place on a map of Eastern Europe, but tomorrow clubs do, and they go, and they bring the gospel, and kids are getting saved. They're bringing the gospel home to parents, and churches are being started or revitalized. Would you please consider supporting your own tomorrow clubs? $30 per month will disciple 30 kids in places you and I couldn't even find on a map. Tomorrowclubs.org/wretched.
Let me share a sample from our latest evangelistic resource, The Man Who Split Time, 22 Proofs That Jesus Is God. Christianity is not a blind faith. It's an eyewitness faith. The Bible is a reliable collection of historical documents written by eyewitnesses during the lifetime of other eyewitnesses. The Man Who Split Time is perfect for any skeptic in your life. Whether it's for evangelizing, giving it to your agnostic friend, or handing out to your youth group, The Man Who Split Time will give you all the answers you need about the deity of Jesus Christ. For more awesome proofs that Jesus is God, all you have to do is visit wretched.org/time and order your copies of The Man Who Split Time, 22 Proofs That Jesus Is God. Get your copies today. wretched.org/time. That's wretched.org/time.
Important dates in Christian history. 1273. Thomas Aquinas completes work on Summa Theologica, the theological masterpiece of the Middle Ages. Aquinas synthesized faith and reason, incorporating Aristotelian philosophy into his work, and provided a theological framework for Catholic doctrine. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Is your church ready for the conversation? This is Wretched Radio, the social justice issue. It's flying home. It's coming to roost, and your church is going to have to deal with it. Make no mistake about it. I do not think that there is a single fellowship that doesn't have disparate ideas about the subject of racism in America. It doesn't go by skin color either. You've got everybody that has different shadings of understandings on this particular subject, and you will be getting back together if you haven't already, and conversations will start happening, and maybe Sunday school classes will fire up, and the subject will bubble to the surface, and you're going to discover, what? That deacon thinks that? What? We have an elder who's on that side? What? Our pastor doesn't say it exactly like I do. How are we gonna get along? Here, perhaps, is a case in point. There was a document that was circulated this week, that was released, The Broken Wall of Hostility, an evangelical statement on the gospel and racism. This is a statement which was signed by a lot of people. By the way, some people who said that they wouldn't sign any sort of statement like this if it weren't theological, but they signed this one. Okay, maybe that gets up your nose. This particular statement, an evangelical statement on the gospel and racism, there's nothing in it that I read that's wrong. It's not very long. It's just condemning racism. I mean, to me, that's like, duh. Do we need an evangelical statement on rape? I mean, yeah, duh. An evangelical statement on pride? An evangelical statement on adultery? It's like, yeah, there's nothing in this document that would cause you to go, I can't sign that. I can't agree with that. Starts out with Ephesians 2:14-16. He himself is our peace, made two groups one, destroying the barrier, the dividing wall of hostility, to create for himself one new humanity out of the two, thus making peace. And in one body to reconcile both of them to God through the cross, by which he put to death their hostility. This is a massive theme throughout the New Testament epistles. When you read about the mystery, Paul does this in Colossians 2-3 times. The mystery, I've been revealing the mystery. What mystery are we talking about here? That the Gentiles have been let in, the doors are open, and in they come, part of God's family. All those who are of Abraham aren't necessarily of Abraham. You've got to be in Christ. And if you're Jew, you're Gentile, you're in Christ, there's your new identity. That was like boing, blast, kaboom. And it is this is the mystery. This was bubbling in the Old Testament. The Jew-Gentile division. The chosen people and the outsiders. This was going on in the Old Testament. And now Paul reveals it. Look at what God is doing. He's going to bring people together, every tribe, every tongue, every nation. The problems you and I can't fix, God does, and he celebrates it for eternity. As we look out over that sea of worshipers, and we see all kinds of shades of melanin, we see all kinds of accents and different languages going on, and they're all one in God. That's the mystery that is now revealed. You could sign that, couldn't you? And it basically goes on to say, we denounce racism. We think that it's bad. There's what, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 points. Everyone must come to God on the same terms and become one body. In reconciling Jews and Gentiles in Christ, surmounting a barrier that God himself once established, God in Christ summons us to surmount every barrier erected merely by human sinfulness. There's nothing here you could, okay. And a bunch of people signed it. Some people who didn't sign the one statement, they signed this statement. And there's a division, isn't it? So people that didn't sign the Dallas statement and said, I don't sign statements like that, sign this statement. What do you think about that person? Is this a divider? Okay, so you think maybe they tipped their hand, perhaps. Okay. Did they sign something heretical here? No, this is just a statement now? Could there be reasons for it that you think are nefarious? There could be, but we're not supposed to speculate on those things, are we? Did these people, there's people in here from Dallas Theological Sem, from Southern Theological Sem. There's some wonky people in here. But they're suddenly these people that heretofore were brothers are not, because they signed a statement that I think you and I could sign off on. By the way, I think this is fascinating. This would be an aside. This is something that I see all too often. On this particular statement, it says, take action. Join with us in affirming the power of the gospel and declaring the evil of racism. Okay, well, that's who I am. That's who you are. I don't need to, whatever. Fine, I'll sign it because, yes, I'm opposed to racism. But take action. What am I supposed to do? If it's the power is the gospel, then my action should be spelled out, preach the gospel of reconciliation. For whatever this is worth, when you hear somebody say that, that's it, we've got to do something, we're not going to stand for this anymore, we've got to take action. Have you noticed they never tell you what that action is? And all you end up is consternated and maybe angry at people without actually a game plan put in place for you to consider? Jesus took care of that for us. He tells us to preach the gospel, make disciples. That is our action. How are you going to treat people in your church when they get back together and they disagree on this subject? This is from the Christian Post. The Spiritual Danger of Trump. New book asks evangelicals to rethink their vote in 2020. Here it comes. This is one that many people thought was lurking, that there was an effort on the social behind the social justice warrior playing field to try to to have an influence on politics and encourage evangelicals to vote for the pro-abort party, which I still find absolutely inexcusable. Absolutely inexcusable. Nevertheless, there's a book written. Now, the people who put this book together, it's 30 supposed evangelicals of different political and professional stripes, is calling on white evangelicals to rethink their support for Donald Trump in 2020 and warns the president is damaging the broader culture's perception of evangelical Christianity. That part actually could be true, but does that mean then you can vote for somebody who's a pro-abort? I'm not talking about right now Donald Trump or Joe Biden. I'm talking about voting for somebody who intentionally wants to spend money to take the lives of whole innocent human beings. That's just a Rubicon we cannot cross. Of course we abhor some other things. That is the big thing. Marriage is another crucial institution that needs to be considered. There is a movement inside of evangelical Christianity that's pushed. Now, I grant you, the people in this book, it's Ron Sider, Evangelicals for Social Action. But you've got other people inside of it that maybe aren't quite as bad. But this idea, it's going to keep spreading. Now, how are we going to deal with one another when this one hits your church? It already has. I actually know some conservative evangelicals who are talking like this. That, hey, the whole abortion thing really hasn't worked out too well, so let's just take a look at the other party because there's other issues that we can consider. Well, I actually disagree with their approach on a lot of those issues anyway. That aside, I don't see how a Bible-believing Christian can pull a lever for somebody who has said, yes, I want more babies to die. And that, by the way, is actually in the platform. How are we going to talk to one another on this? Now, there could be some serious issues behind this. But if initially, let's say that somebody in your church kind of gets swept up with the argument. They hear somebody give a persuasive speech. They go to some symposium. And they're, hey, you know what? You know, that is true. You know, we still have Roe v. Wade. And hey, look what the Supreme Court just did. So you know, I guess I could take a look at somebody who's a liberal who wants, you know, the whole abortion thing. I guess it's not that big of a deal anymore. How are you going to treat that person who maybe at that point is just confused and they need some instruction and they need to be taught and they need to be walked through it? Are you willing to do that, or are they just automatically outside of the camp? We got some new issues coming our way. And might I just suggest, as we manipulate our way through these issues, that perhaps we're just a little bit slower and a little bit more thoughtful than, say, cable news, and we're more pastoral, even if we're not a pastor, that we're concerned about the soul of an individual, and that we have a basis of love with them as they profess to be a fellow follower of Jesus Christ, so that we can teach and lead and help them. Are you prepared to do that? If not, might I at least challenge you to consider it? And until tomorrow, go serve your King.